We were discussing Hakara Satov, recognizing good, which is the main foundation of Hakara Satov, like we explained. That's the first stage. And what it has to do with the Mesillas Yesharim is, the Mesillas Yesharim says one of the ways of acquiring Zrizus in Avodas Hashem and really being excited about what you're doing is to realize how much you owe the Ribbono Shel Olam, and you're doing what you know, what makes him happy, or what makes him happy because what's good for you, and you're excited about doing it because you feel such gratitude. So we explained Hakara Satov starts with recognizing good, that you're a recipient of some kind of good. You don't feel that everything's coming to you. You don't take everything for granted. That's the first thing. The second thing is that you recognize even the smallest good of, and not just wait for big things to be happy about, and you recognize each portion of even big things, each small portion also is something that you recognize the good and feel grateful for it. The third thing we said is that you recognize what's really good in this world, and what's really good is what is eternal. Right, there are passing goods and temporary good, and then there's things that are good eternally, and you have to be able to discern which those things are. And the next point is to recognize that Torah and mitzvahs and avodas Hashem is what's really good for you. That's really what a person really should want to do in this world. It's not just if you look at it just as a responsibility, a liability, a chov, right? Something you have to do, then you're not going to be so excited about doing it. But if you look at it that it's something that's really good for you, it's beneficial to you. It's probably the most beneficial thing because it's what gives you eternity. And you really believe that, then you're going to be excited about doing it, because people are excited about doing things that they gain from, that are good for them. They're not so excited about doing things they have to do and don't see too much benefit from it. So here I want to speak a little bit about what we've spoken about in the past, but like I said, not in this forum, and in this forum, therefore, maybe a little bit of a review, but it's okay. We said that the Chacham by the Seder asks the following question. Moha Eidos Vahukim Vamishpatim Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu Eschem. What are all these mitzvahs that God commanded us? So it's obvious he's not asking what the mitzvahs are, because he wouldn't be too much of a Chacham. So he must know what the mitzvahs are, so he must be asking something beyond that. So the Ibn Ezra says what he's asking is the following. Goyim, get away easy. All they have to do is seven relatively easy things. Right, not to murder, not to steal, not to curse God, right, not to eat meat taken from a live animal. It's not one of the bigger taivas that people have, you know, to pull a leg off an animal and eat it or whatever. So that's right, that reduces already to six, right, not to serve avodah zarah and so on, not to be immoral. Relatively easy things, and if they do it, they get olam haba for it. And we have to keep 613 things. Why did God foist this tremendous yoke on us and on nobody else? What did we do wrong? That's the Chacham's question. Why are we singled out for this tremendous burden? Why can't we have it easy too? So the answer to the Chacham is, Avadim Hayinu L'Faro B'Mitzrayim. And the Ibn Ezra explains, let's see God's track record. He took us out of Egypt, obviously for our benefit, not for his sake. He took us through the Midbar for 40 years and took care of our needs, obviously for our sake. We're the beneficiaries. He gave us Eretz Yisrael, obviously for our sake. So we see that whatever God does, he's doing for our benefit. So if he gave us all this Torah, it must be l'tov lanu l'chayosenu k'ayom hazeh. It's not a liability. It's not a burden. It's an opportunity. Because the Rabban Shalom saw that we have the potential to develop our neshamas to a level that no other nation could ever develop, no other human being could ever develop except a Jew. We inherited that ability from our avos and imos. It's part of our innate nature that we can have a relationship with God, which is Olam Haba, on a level that no other nation could have. But in order to do that, you need mitzvahs. You have to polish your neshama to make it bring out its full potential. And the way of doing that is Torah and mitzvahs. There's no other way. So the Rabbanu Shem gave us a lot of Torah. It says that Ratz HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakos is Yisrael. The Rabbanu Shem wanted to benefit the Jewish people. That's one meaning of L'Zakos. But another meaning means to purify the Jewish people. The benefit is this purification. Torah and mitzvahs polishes our neshama and makes it have a closer connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's the only way of doing it. And therefore, it's a schus. It's a tremendous opportunity that the Rabbanu Shem gave us. And he won't let us give it up. He'll do everything in his power to make sure that ultimately we get it. Whether it means punishing us or chastising, just like a parent who wants what's good for their child. They want them to grow up to be a mensch. They're going to chastise them and punish them or whatever because they know it's ultimately for their good. So here the Rabbanu Shem doesn't give up on us. And he's not just going to say, well, you could have the opportunity if you don't want it, take it or leave it. No. I don't want you to take it or leave it. I want you to get it. So I'll do everything in my power to make sure you get it. But you're going to have to choose to get it. So that's what they tell the Torah. The Torah is not a liability. Torah is an opportunity. Torah and mitzvah is an opportunity. And that is what's it called? It says, the Pasuk says, what does God want from you? Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, after the 40 years, turns to Klal Yisrael, and he says, final bottom line, Mo'ashem lokech, ki im, all he wants is, l'yiras Hashem lokech, l'yavos l'dofka b'leches b'chol t'rochav l'shmokol chukov mitzvos l'mishpatov. He only wants a million things. Doesn't make sense. The words don't flow. The answer is the last two words of the pasuk, l'tov loch. It's all for your good. God doesn't want anything from you. He's not looking for anything from you. It's all for your good. It's for your benefit. So what does God want from you? Nothing. He wants to give you an opportunity. All of these Torah, mitzvahs, avos, hashemira, is all for your good. And if you understand that, then you're going to be really excited and anxious to do it. Then you'll have zrizus. But if it's a burden, nobody likes to do it. It's something that's a burden. We explained also that was why the Goyim didn't get the Torah. The Rabbanu Shem offered the Torah to Esav, and they said, what's in it? So the Rabbanu Shem said, it says that you can't murder. He said, oh, murder, we have a bracha that we live by the sword. How could we have a Torah that says you can't murder? Conflicts with our bracha. So the Rabbanu Shem left them, went to Yishmael. They asked, what's in it? God said, says you can't steal. He said, steal? We got to have a bracha that yadlo bakol v'yad kol bo. We, our hands in everybody's pocket. How could we have a Torah that says you can't steal? Rabbanu Shem left them, came to Klal Yisrael, we said, Nasa v'nishma. We got the Torah. So the question obviously is, the Goyim didn't say no. They said they have a conflict. So why didn't God explain to them there is no conflict? There's no stira between Lo Sirtzach and Al-Char B'Chatichya. Al-Char B'Chatichya means you're going to be mercenaries. In time of war, you're going to be hired to be soldiers of fortune. That's how you're going to make your living. That's not murder. That's wartime. You're allowed to do that. So, therefore, Lo Sirtzach is murder, and this is soldiers of fortune, no problem. Why didn't God tell the Yishmaelim, Yodol Bakol V'Yad Kol Bo does not mean that you have a license to pickpocket people. Yodol Bakol V'Yad Kol Bo means that the world, the words are called, you need the world for your basic needs, because you're nomads, the Arabs, and the world is going to need you too, because today we see that with oil. That's what it means. It doesn't mean you can steal. It's a different meaning completely. So now do you want the Torah or not? Why did God abruptly leave them? So one answer we've given that's connected to this topic, there are other answers. But one answer we've given is the following. If I would have come here tonight and said, I need a favor. Can you do me a favor? So, what would you have to say before you responded yes or no? No? What do you want me to do? What do you want? right? You could not have answered, what's it called, yes or no. He could have said no, you see. But if you really were, you know, wanted to do the favor, you couldn't say yes, because maybe I want something that you can't do. Right? I need $1 million interest-free loan for the next 99 years. If somebody can do that, see me after the shiur. But Lamaisa, what's it called, perhaps there's nobody here. I have a real big feeling that there is nobody here that could do that. Right? So you couldn't possibly say yes. So you'd have to ask first. If you could say yes, I said, well, this is what I need. You say, well, I didn't know that's what you needed. Right? Right? I need somebody to carry my car across the moshav because it doesn't move. They, what's it called, could you do it? So most of you probably would say you can't do it. So you have to ask me, what do you want? And then you can decide if you want to do it, or you can do it, or don't, or want to do it, or whatever. But if I would have come here tonight with a beautifully gift-wrapped package and said, I am so, you know, indebted to this shiur, you give me a chance, you know, to say on my Torah once a week or whatever, put it on the internet yet too, right? And I really want to show you how precious you are to me, and I brought you a present. Okay, don't hold your breath till that happens. But the Maisa, well, maybe I should have done it. Maybe I should do it every week or whatever. I don't know. Maybe. Probably a very good thing. So, as that's a call, nobody here would say, what is it? You don't do that. You graciously take it, and when I turn my back, you look fast to see what it is. Right? That's how you get a present, right? The bar mitzvah boy, give him the present, right? He says, thank you, and as soon as you turn your back, it looks fast to see what, you know, what it is. More svarim. So, that's what's it called, that's how you accept the present. You don't ask what it is. You don't like it. Give it to somebody else, whatever. When the Goyim were offered the Torah, they understood that God wanted something from them. It's a liability. He's asking them for something. So they asked, what's in it? We don't know if we could do you the favor. And God said, you know, maybe they're just curious. So I'll test them. So he told them something difficult. And they said, you know, we don't know if we could do you that favor. It conflicts with a bracha that we got. So God said, if you think that I'm offering you the Torah because I want something from you, doing me a favor, then there's nothing to talk about. So he left them. The only answer is what Klal Yisrael said, Nasa v'nishma. We don't care what it is, whatever it is, give it. It's a present, we'll take it. Whatever it is. The joke they say is that when they offer the Torah to the garden, they ask what's in it. God told them. When he offered it to the Jews, they said, how much does it cost? And God said, it's free. It's free, we'll take 10. And it's not so far from the truth. We understood that it's a present. It's a benefit. So we said Nasa v'nishma. That's what Torah is all about. It's an opportunity. Now, and comes perfectly after the Tuesday of getting your parnasa by saying Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum. I saw again it was downloaded. Art Scrolls sent it out or whatever. Then everybody's going to have easy parnasa, because I'm sure everybody. I did it too. So I'm honest. I also did it. Right, Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum, with a little paragraph of Tefillah, and that's it. Now I'm set for the rest of the year. Right, no Shiloh, we're going to have good Parnassah because we did the Skula of Parnassah. That doesn't mean that Torah is easy. It doesn't mean that Torah is fun. It means it's a benefit. There's a very big difference between a benefit and something that's easy and fun. It's like, because the Torah is a yoke. The what's it called? Rashi says a few places in Shas, right? That mitzvahs lav lehenes nitnu ela la'ol al tzavareinu. It's a yoke around our neck. That doesn't sound like, you know, real benefit. It sounds like a yoke. And the ma'aseh it is. You know, it's no yoke. It's the ma'aseh. The Torah is difficult, not fun. A lot of things in Torah that are not fun. So, is it a benefit? It's something you're supposed to be really excited about. Whoa, I can't wait to keep this benefit and this opportunity. Or is it a yoke around your neck? And yokes around your neck you don't really look forward to. So the example, the comparison, is a treasure map. Somebody gives you a treasure map, and it tells you that there is a treasure of millions and millions of dollars of gold, silver, diamond, whatever it may be, buried somewhere in the mountain in South America somewhere. So first you have to get a ticket to South America. Okay, it costs a lot of money. Then you finally get there, and you find out that you can't get to this mountain by car. You can only go by donkey. So you spend weeks on a donkey getting to this mountain. Then you find out donkey's not interested in climbing the mountain. So you got to climb it by hand and foot and pickaxe or whatever. Finally get to the top of the mountain, and there's no extension cords for electric tools. So you got to use your hand shovel and pick, and it takes months and months to dig through solid rock. Now, are you going to complain that the guy who gave you the treasure map gave you a burden? No, because you know that eventually you're going to hit pay dirt over there. It just takes a lot of time and work and effort and investment, but it's worth it. That's what Torah. Torah is a treasure map. It's not easy. It's not supposed to be easy. And it is a yoke around our shoulders. But the benefit outweighs anything that you could possibly sacrifice. It's worth every sacrifice. Because the benefit is great. It's for your good. But it entails a tremendous amount of work. Unfortunately, people today don't want to know from that. They want the easy way out in everything. Right? If they could get a computer chip put in their brain and know Kol HaTorah Kula, so they'll do that. And if not, so then it's our scroll or this or that that makes everything easy. Don't want anything that's difficult. Can't be difficult. Has to be easy. Right? Fun. Get to the fun part in a second, but at least easy part. And it's not. Anything in this world that's worth anything is very easy. It takes a lot of sacrifice and investment or whatever. And that's what makes it worthwhile. I think I've said it many times, I'll say it again. There are some new faces here that probably didn't hear this, but I saw the Modia last year, or a year and a half ago, that there was supposed to be a new orange on the market this year from the Israeli orange growers. Put a new orange on the world market. Different orange than ever existed. They invested millions of dollars in producing genetically this orange, and it's a new orange. So the columnist in the Modia asked the representative of the orange growers, what was wrong with the old orange? Why'd you have to invest millions of dollars in a new orange? So he said, we got to please our clientele. And the new orange has a very thin skin and no pits. And people today want it fast and easy. And we have to provide what our clientele wants. They want an orange that's fast to peel and easy to eat. No pits, thin skin, that's what they want. And that's what we have to produce. That's what's going to sell oranges. So when it comes to oranges, it may be fine to have easy and fast oranges. When it comes to Torah, there's nothing fast and there's nothing easy. There's no, quick schemes to become a Talmud Chacham, or to educate your children, or to have a good marriage. It takes a tremendous amount of commitment. And part of the problem why there's very problematic shalom bayis today, especially by young couples, is because nobody wants to make any commitment. Somebody once told me that today they don't give out marriage licenses anymore. They give out learner's permits. Because nobody wants to commit themselves to anything. In fact, that's one of the reasons why there's a shidduch problem. There's so many girls that can't find shidduchim today. Part of the reason is because there's so many boys who don't want to commit themselves to anything. They're afraid to make any kind of commitment. So there's a lot of single guys, not because they can't find shidduchim, because they're not interested. They just don't want to commit themselves to anything. Or they're looking for something fast, easy, the ideal, who knows what, and something that doesn't involve any kind of investment and we'll work it out. No, if it's not, doesn't work out, then forget it. Right? If there's problems, so then forget it. Everything in this world should be problem-free, and if there's any problems, just change. If you don't have a problem with your suit, get a new suit. If you have a problem with your job, get a new job. If you have a problem with the place where you live, find a new place to live. Problem with your wife, get a new wife. It becomes not just a throwaway society, but if there's any problem and you have to work on it, forget about it. Start something new. And people are, that's what people are today. And to a certain degree, we educate our children like that too. We think we have to teach our children that Torah is fun. It's really fun. My little grandson sits and watches on my computer, Uncle Maishi. right? He knows Uncle Moshe better than Uncle Moshe. And you know, Uncle Moshe is, everybody's a mitzvah man and a mitzvah girl, and it's so much fun to keep the Torah, whatever. So I'm thinking to myself, that's great, you know, when you're like 3-4 years old, you can tell these kids, oh, it's so much fun to keep mitzvahs or whatever. And the kid gets to be 5 and start, you know, to tell him, you know, you can't eat milk after meat, and he can't have his ice cream cone right away, wait, start with an hour or whatever, right? We'll get to that, you know, what the waiting between milk and meat, even for kids. And all of a sudden the kid discovers, hey, this ain't fun. I thought Torah is fun. I'm a fun mitzvah boy. I want to eat my ice cream cone. This ain't fun. Right? And I'll tell you a secret. I'm sure most of you already know that, but maybe the younger guys in yeshiva haven't found that out yet. There's a lot of things in Torah that are a lot less fun than waiting an hour for an ice cream cone. Right? A lot less fun. Without going into too much details, right? There's Yom Kippur, and there's Pesach, right, that raises, you know, goosebumps on most women just thinking about it, right? Those aren't fun. It is really not fun, right? So, and there are other things in Yiddishkeit that are really not fun. So, what are we supposed to teach our children? It's fun, not fun? Ramosha Feinstein has a word that people misunderstand. He said that a whole generation was lost to Yiddishkeit from parents who were moser nefesh for Shabbos, and their kids were not shomer Shabbos. So how could it be? How could the Russian let such a thing happen? That parents, that mamash sacrificed, they came in the early 1900s to America thinking they're going to find gold in the streets, and they couldn't find a job. And the only jobs that were available were ones that you couldn't keep Shabbos. And if you kept Shabbos and didn't show up on Shabbos, you didn't have a job on Monday. You had to look for another job, and there weren't too many jobs available. So many people gave in. They used to have minyanim, early minyanim, not so people get home and eat the cholent and go to sleep. They go to work. It was almost pikuach nefesh. It wasn't halachically that, but people just couldn't, they couldn't put up with it. So a lot of people who were frum people, they came to daven Shabbos morning, and after that they went to work. But there were individuals, mamish individuals, who were able, mamish to sacrifice. They didn't know where their piece of bread was going to come from. They didn't have a job. They knew every week they didn't show up Shabbos, they'd be looking for a job on Monday. And they were moser nefesh for it. And their children grew up and became mechallel Shabbos. How could it be? Says Rav Moshe. He said, because when these people came home Friday night, they used to krechts and sigh and moan and groan. So hard to keep Shabbos and so hard to be a Jew. And every week we have to look for a new job and Shabbos is so difficult. So the kids heard that. And they're not stupid. And they said, our parents are crazy. Why would they really want to do this monster called Shabbos? We'll get old enough. We'll know, right? So we're not going to give in to this ridiculous thing. It's hard and it's ridiculous or whatever. So what should the parents have said, according to their emotion? Oh, Shabbos is so much fun. We just love to look for a new job every week, right? It's so much fun not to know when your next piece of bread's going to be. That's what should have told the kids. What should they have said? It wasn't difficult. It was difficult. What they should have said is, it's hard, and it's very, very difficult, and it's a big sacrifice, but it's worth it. That's what they should have said. It's not fun, but sometimes things that are worth it, things that are difficult, are worth it. And it's worth it. If the children would have heard that, they would have seen, wow, even though our parents are really struggling or whatever, but they think that it's an opportunity, it's a benefit to make that struggle, because they see that the benefit they're getting outweighs anything they're sacrificing. That's what they should have, the message they should have given over to their children. Not that it's fun. Torah is not fun. But it's something worth the effort, and the male, you should be excited about it. Because it's like digging for the treasure. It's not fun digging, but it sure becomes a very positive and worthwhile thing if you know that you're going to find millions of dollars of diamonds if you keep digging. You keep it up. So that's the next point, to realize what is good. Good doesn't necessarily mean it's easy and it's fun. And if you educate a child like that from when he's young, then he's more prone to be able to accept a responsibility and accept a burden of Torah, knowing that it's worth it, than if you train him that everything has to be fun, then he quickly learns that Torah is not fun. It's discipline. It's not doing what you like to do. And the male throws it off. I don't blame a kid for throwing such a thing off if he thinks that's supposed to be fun and it's not.
But if he doesn't see the results either, like, because he's a kid. The kids are not so, okay, don't worry, after you die, you'll get...
It's not even that. It's worth it because, and he sees on the parents, it's worth it because look at the difference between a family life where you could sit down at a Shabbos table you have values, and as a kid he gets older, he can understand better, but he could see that we have a functioning family, and we have a family that's together because we keep mitzvahs or whatever. It's not just what's going to be after you die, but it's in this world too.
A lot of people don't keep Shabbos out of functioning families.
But it's not that you can't get it some other way. But this way is a very positive way. And there's something positive about it, and there's values that make life important. Everything is not just, you know, what's it called? The things that make people not only value what they have, but they make people better people. And if they see that, right, and it depends how you live the Torah too. But if you're an example, and you really feel like that, you can give it over to your children. If you don't feel like that, then maybe there's something wrong with your father or mother, or their father or mother, maybe, and how they educated. But it's not just what's going to be after in Olam Haba. That's not the inyan. The inyan is that Torah can be rewarding and fulfilling and make life meaningful. It gives meaning to life, even in difficult times. I'll give an example, right? In a difficult thing. Right? Somebody who has no emunah, no bitachin, and suffers a loss. Somebody dies. Or they suffer some kind. They're lost. It's meaningless, and it's hefker, and it's debilitating. Somebody who has emunah and bitachin can go through the most difficult times with that emunah and bitachin. So isn't that a benefit? It's a benefit to have emunah and bitachin because it makes your life easier to face the difficulties in this world. That's one small thing. There's many other things. So it's not just Olam Haba. But it needs a lot of chinuch for the parents too. And many of us, including myself, are maybe not holding by that, by what we should be. So in the male, it's difficult for us also. So first you have to learn yourself. That's what the Mishul Shalom is. This is Hakaras HaTov, recognizing what's really good. And it's not easy. You have to learn a lot, and you have to experience emotionally a lot to really appreciate what's good in this world. And not what appears to be good, but really in the long run isn't good at all. And the last thing is, once you have all of this, then you have to take all that good that you recognize and attribute it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then you discover God through the good in the world. So you trace it back to its source. You don't look at the secondary sources. An example we give is that a baby, right, sees that it drinks from a bottle, so it gives thanks to the bottle for providing it with milk. Then it sees that the mother fills the bottle with milk. She realizes that milk cartons give milk, not bottles. He's been giving the thank you to the wrong thing. He's giving thanks to the bottle, but it really comes to the milk carton. Then he sees you take the milk carton from the refrigerator, so the refrigerators give milk. And then the milkman, or the, not a milkman anymore, right, or the makolet, or the cow, and the grass, and eventually you get back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So after you recognize the good, and you discern what's really good, you attribute it back to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then you, from Hakaras HaTov, you come to Hakaras HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is what Hakaras HaTov is all about. And Mimela, what gives you an incentive to want to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam because of all the benefits you get from him. And even though you're thankful also for the secondary people who pass it on to you, but you realize that ultimately it comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's the first source. So that is the inyan of Hakaras HaTov, more or less. Any questions on this? Next week we'll finish off that parak and go on to the next inyan. But this is one crucial inyan of how to acquire zrizus, is by appreciating and being excited about Torah and mitzvahs. Okay. We'll start the inyan of kashrus.
Yeah. What if someone, well, and then make empathize. In other words, it's a real physical torture. Now, it's time that these people have extra children. I mean,
right.
This is just a harder.
Again, some
harder effort on his part. I mean,
sometimes you don't see, even from that. I just read a story of a family that the father died young. He was in a big business with it was one of these Chaim Walder stories. True story, supposedly. The father was partners with his brothers in a big multi-million-dollar corporation. They lived a real nice life, firm people. And the father died young. And the brothers, like, just erased his memory. And they had to go through a court thing to get any kind of, share in the earnings of the company or whatever. And finally, they lived mamish poor existence, a poor widow, and the uncles or whatever totally abandoned them completely. And finally, after 10 years of fighting it in court, they came out with a very small 4% of the total assets of the company was supposed to be paid to them, when really their father deserved 25%, which means they only got millions instead of tens of millions. Okay, but the Maisa kept them all going, and they were able. She, this widow, was able to marry off her children and buy them homes or whatever, because they had the Maisa. But it bothered her all the time of how much they were cheated out by these uncles of the real, what they really deserve. And then in 2008, it says there was terrible economic problems in the world, in America, and that whole business fell apart completely. And not only did it fall apart, they were now in debt for millions and millions of dollars. One of them went to jail, one of the uncles. The woman who's writing this says, it was a big nesoya not to be happy for what happened to them. But now she saw that had they gotten a share in the, not payment, a payoff, then they would have nothing. So in the end, right, it was whatever happened, the fact that they disowned them, the fact that in the end they had to go through court and get a, at least they had these millions that they were able to live on or whatever was left from it. And had they not had that, but they had a share in the business, which should have been, they would have nothing. Almost more or less than nothing. So sometimes you don't know. Even Rahman al-Islam, again, I don't wish on anybody's ever leg amputated. But you never know, what could have been worse. Right? There was a maisa that I heard of years ago. A person... became paralyzed, but not completely paralyzed, all of a sudden. And he couldn't work and whatever, and eked out a meager living because of that, and he had a very curtailed life. He lived a long time, and they got used to the situation or whatever. When he finally died, they found that he had some kind of heart condition, which I never found out about. And had he been able to live a normal life, he probably would have died of that heart condition, right, years and years before. But because he wasn't able to exert himself, he lived a very long life. And even though he lived a curtailed life, he basically had a nice life. So you never know what sometimes what appears to be bad for you really could be good. And sometimes we don't see it. Sometimes you don't see it in this world, you see it in the next world. Right? Sometimes you can't see it. See a person that suffers in this world, terrible things, and you never see the result. But for that neshama, for some reason, in the next world, they'll see that that was what was best for them, and that was the best thing. It's I can't answer, I can't explain to you. Right? I wish I could. I can't. But Lamaisa, we see from so many situations that sometimes we do see it, that ultimately, at least what's going to be in the next world is going to make up for what appears to be difficult here, but it's worth it in the end. That's the end. Sometimes you have to sacrifice a lot in this world, but in the end, the next world's worth it. That's not necessarily the incentive you give to a child, but that's the truth.